This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 2, Legal Regulatory Issues, held on the 30th of March, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Michael Fleming. Please begin.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Good morning, good day, or good afternoon, or good evening to where you might be at. Just wanted to say once again, thank you very much for coming today. This is our first meeting past the ICANN 58 meeting in, where were we at? Copenhagen. And I have to say that it was a wonderful and it was a good time for us there. As is the agenda, let's just quickly go through it very quickly. Does anyone have any SOI updates? Any updates to statements of interest? None. Good. Okay, today we'll be actually talking about closed generics, and I think I shared with everyone. First of all, can everyone hear me clearly, or is my voice a little bit too strong? Loud and clear. Okay, good. I shared with everyone the agenda about 8 hours and 45 minutes ago on the email stating that we'll be talking about closed generics. This is true, and we're going to do that. But I should have put in there a small recap for ICANN 58, what happened. To be honest, as far as the work track 2 went, mainly we focused on polishing our questions for the CC2, in which we did a very good job of doing. We were able to, I think, add 2 questions to the CC2 work track 2 area. Those have been polished and put out there for public comment. Other than that, we did have a lot of good feedback in regards to work track 2 topics, but nothing fairly concrete, I think, that has introduced something new for us to chew on or something that we are able to bring a new focus on. Therefore, I'm not really going to spend too much time on what happened in ICANN 58. Rather, I'd like to keep the discussion going for what we're going to be doing on the closed generics. Therefore, let's keep going. So yes, closed generics is what we'll be talking about today. As well as, lastly, does anybody have any other business that they want to have some special time for today? None? Okay. Then I won't take any time out of the schedule for that. Okay. Terry, can I have powers to move the slide, or can I ask you to go down the next slide, please?
Michael, I'll go ahead and put you up to presenter, and you will have the power. There you go.
All right. Thank you. Oh, well. I feel like Captain Planet. Thank you. Yes, closed generics. First and foremost, let's do a quick recap of what we talked about on the 2nd of March at 21 UTC. First of all, originally we talked about what a closed generic is. As far as the NGPC is concerned, on the 2nd of February 2013, during their meeting, they stated that a closed generic is referred to in the community as a TLD string that is a generic term and is proposed to be operated by a participant exclusively for its own benefit. Part of what we need to do in this group is we need to come to a consensus about on a definition of what a closed generic is. I was speaking with Jeff the other day about how to go about doing this. And first of all, let's very quickly look at what we already have in writing. So within the GMSO policy and within the applicant guidebook, there is no specific reference to closed generics. The registry agreement, however, does state that what a generic string is in Spec 11.3.D, referring to a generic string, let's see, maybe the last definition of this page. Yes, in terms of a generic string, it's defined as a string consisting of a word or term that denominates or describes a general class of goods, services, groups, organizations, or things, as opposed to distinguishing a specific brand of goods, services, groups, organizations, or things from those of others, as well as being mentioned in the Code of Conduct, where the specification 9 Code of Conduct forbids a registry or its affiliates to allocate names in its own name, its own right other than names registered through an ICANN accredited registrar, or up to 100 names pursuant to Section 3.2 of Specification 5. And there's also mention of this, in areas that where the RA does allow for exclusive use, when an exemption to a code of conduct is granted by ICANN, as well as when a registry qualifies for a brand TLD. So in this sense, a closed generic would have reference to either of these when it's granted for exclusive use as per the code of conduct. And then the aspect of a trademark, if the generic is used within the as long as the generic is used within the niche class of goods that the trademark grants it for, then it can also apply to as a specification 13, such as .food, for example. So these are the mentions of where a closed generic is within the RA. And this does conclude our recap. This does conclude of our recap of what we talked about the week before. But we also, in addition to talking about what a closed generic is, we also kind of did a review of how we got here today. I'm not going to focus too much on that today because I would rather spend time on the meat of the conversation. However, we will be coming back to this aspect of what a closed generic is in order for us to seek a consensus on the definition. Now then, moving on to the closed generics pros and cons. So, staff, Emily, to be more specific, has been so kind to actually put together a list of the pros and cons, and I believe other staff members might have contributed a little bit of feedback to that, but thank you so much, Emily, first of all. And what was compiled was the pros and cons from the public comment that ICANN did in regards to whether or not criteria should be established about closed generic itself. So what we'll be doing is we'll be looking at these pros and cons, and our objective is to find if whether or not potential harm in allowing or not allowing the closed, potential, to find if there is or not potential harm in allowing of closed generics, as well as any other notable findings from the public comments. We will not be looking at the pros and cons within these slides directly. Emily is going to shift this to the PDF that she put together. Emily, could you go back really quick, or could you post the link to the summary of public comments in the notes section just for everyone to view? That might be a good reference. We will be referencing the summary of public comments, So it might be a good idea to click that link and to open it up in another tab or something. Oh, sorry, my throat is a little, a few frogs in there. Alright, so Samuel, please go, if you do, you are free to move, shift over to the PDF. Is everybody with me so far? Does anybody want to speak up about what we're going to be doing? No? All right, let's keep going. We're with you. It was awesome. We're with you to the end. That's wonderful. All right, let's move it up a little bit here. Thanks, Emily, for putting that up. Let's see. I'm feeling 80%. Okay, now I'm feeling 90%. Shift that a little bit. All right, how is that? Can everybody see it? All right. Okay, so let's just go through the document here that's been put together. We haven't, these are just rough statements that have were kind of been made within the document itself. There is, Assembly of Public Commons is a good 42 pages. A lot of it's administrative details, however. The heart of the comments is probably a good, I think, 10 pages or so, I think. Or there's others, but what we're doing in relation to this is about 10 pages. Or 9 or 8, but sorry, 9 or 10. But anyways, so we haven't really pulled out who said what. But we are looking at the statements that were made, just to kind of get an idea and kind of get the conversation going. So I'm going to go through these one by one as to the pros for whether or not closed generics should be allowed and the cons for whether or not a closed generic should be restricted. Reasons for each. And I would love to hear what people have to say on these in regard to these. So first of all, should we start with the pros or should we start with the cons? Pros, all right. Everybody enjoys the left to right. I enjoy the right to left sometimes. I guess that's a cultural thing. But anyways, all right, pros. So reasons for, or should we do one pro and then one con? We should assume people read them. Kurt, you have a wise. Very wise indeed. Okay. Let's just go down this and go through it. Okay, so pros, closed generics, whether or not they should be allowed. New types of TLDs could be a source of business model innovation. Can everyone agree that the new types of TLDs could be a source of business model innovation? Can everyone agree that even closed generics could be a new type of business model innovation? Okay, all right, that's fine. Jeff has stated that you should go through all these and see, get thoughts as which people view as persuasive. All right, that's fine. All right, I can move with that too. All right, so that was the first pro. I'm just going to go down the list of the pros, and I'd like to at least stop there to see if there is any feedback, and if not, we'll just keep going through the cons as well. So, going down the list, innovation can lead to greater competition and new services that are beneficial to the public and promote consumer choice. The next one is, ICANN is not a regulator and should not attempt to regulate issues related to competition and business models. The next one on the list is there are no objective criteria for determining what constitutes a generic word. ICANN should not attempt to classify words for regulatory purposes. The next one on the list is it is not possible to have universally applicable definitions for the term generic across languages. Therefore, it is unclear how ICANN could apply policies around generic terms in a way that it is fair and consistent. Next one. The purpose of expanding the DNS is to increase utility. Dictating the way TLDs can be used undermines this goal. Next one. Generic words are already in use by specific brands / companies at the second level, foods.food.com, books.com, etc. There is little practical differences between, there is little practical difference between using them, these terms at the first level and second level. Next one. There is little difference between closed generics and other TLDs already in play, such as some community application and brands that correspond to generic strings. Next one. There is no automatic link between owning a domain name and dominating a market signified by that string, see Amazon.com and Books.com, which is owned by Barnes & Noble. So those are the pros that we went through. Is there any comments on those as of yet? Jeff, feel free.
Thanks. Give your voice a little rest. One of the things that I think is interesting, and I went through these and actually went back and reread some of the comments that were submitted, is that there definitely seems to be a different definition of a user depending on whether you agree with the pros or the cons, or you agree with having them or not having it be closed generic. It seems that those that are in favor of not having closed generics define the user as a registrant, meaning that that TLDs, all generic TLDs should be available and open for anyone to register names. So it's basically about the registrant's right to register those names that are in the TLD. It seemed that those who favor the ability or the right to have exclusive use generic top-level domains look at the user as being the ultimate end user, the one that goes to that website or that gets those emails, as opposed to the registrant. And so one of the things we need to be definitive on is when we talk about competition, who are we talking about competition? Is it competition amongst registrants for those names, or is it competition amongst users or people that go to that site? So I think they're two very different things. I think a lot of the comments mix them up, and it's about defining the harm. We care more about the, quote, harm caused by registrants not being able to register in a TLD, or the harm to the, you know, what kind of harms are there to the end user? And so when you go through the cons, you're going to see that, you know, are these harms to the registrant as opposed to harms to the end user? Like these are more things that we need to kind of consider in this in order to make the determination. Who are we looking out for in the end?
Thank you, Jeff. That was very insightful. Oh, I'm so sorry. I should have gotten a drink while you were doing that. You were speaking. That was very insightful. Hearing that, I feel that when we talk about when you look at the end user as the individual that's actually looking at the website, in some ways I can feel that conversation going a bit further and viewing it, for example, the closed generic, perhaps the end user can be described as the customer of the registry that operates the closed generic. If you'd like to try exploring that, because in that aspect, I feel that while it is the end user that's looking at the website, and in a way, it might be a customer of the registry itself. So when they're viewing it, is that they're viewing the world or the consumer as the what was this first word that you used? The consumer as the it's another C word. As the user, sorry. So that was just my two cents on that. Let's keep that in mind. I'm sorry. There were apparently pros on the second page as well that I failed to go through. So let's just go through those very quickly and then we'll come back to the beginning. So on the next page, our first pro is regulation of closed generics limits free expression by imposing collective obligations and top-down regulations on domain owners. So, as Rajesh stated, that the aspect of in this aspect, we would be looking at it as the end user would be the individual viewing the website would be the end user. This one looks at imposing top-down regulations on domain owners. So, in this aspect, are domain owners defined? This is another thing we can look at. Are domain owners the second-level domain owners or the top-level domain owners? Steve Coates, you don't understand this one. What don't you understand? Absolutely, don't clear that up. Phil, my explanation of the end users being customers would be the end users, as in Jeff was trying to state, that the end users are the individuals looking at the actual domain names, so looking at the websites within the closed generic TLD. So in my aspect, that would be, my understanding is that that can be another interpretation for the consumer or the customer of the registry. If you look at it in a closed market type of aspect, it could be the customer of that registry within the business market. For example, I'd really not like to use an example because it might seem like I'm concentrating on one place, but let's just use the example of .book. If a book company owned .book, or if a book company owned .book, then it would be a potential, and they had the rights to operate that in a closed manner, it could be an interpretation that the people viewing .book domain names are their customers within their normal business aspect. So in that aspect, I could think one interpretation of the end user as far as the individual looking at the website where Jeff stated could also be interpreted as the customer of the registry and their normal business practices. So Gigi, okay, Jeff, let me just address that question really quick. That is one aspect, whether or not a closed generic could be operated as a dot brand, that is one aspect, and that is one possible way, if you have the specification 13, and that it's possible to be recognized as the it's possible for a generic to be recognized in that way with a trademark if there's a trademark for that generic term, but that's a little bit different of a ball field as opposed to the closed generic aspect. But Jeff, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, to address Steve's comment. At the time that the closed generic debate came into play, the applications were already submitted for operating these closed generics. So let's say Google applied for .search. And in their initial application, they had said that they would use .search for internal purposes, or I forgot exactly what they said, but it was a closed TLD. There were a number of complaints that were received by a lot of people saying that Google and other companies should not be able to take a generic term like .search or .book or whatever and use it solely for their own purposes internally, that that harmed consumers, and that the only fair way was to require that any ELD that was deemed to be generic should automatically be open so that anyone could register domain names in there. The ICANN board proposed doing that in a top-down fashion without actually going through the community through a bottom-up process. So a lot of people that filed comments said that ICANN shouldn't be able to change the process midway. You are allowed to apply for it as a closed generic, and ICANN shouldn't top-down change the requirements, change the regulation. And that's, I think, where a lot of those comments came from. It was more of the timing in which the ICANN board came in. On the consumer argument, and I know we're not quite on the pros yet, or the cons yet, but if you look at one of the cons, and this is what I found a little confusing to me, is like one of the cons says, like the third one, closed generics favor large industry players, tipping the scales in favor of those who already dominate the market and potentially limiting consumer choice. And when they talk about consumer choice here, and then later on where it talks about confusing consumers and consumers may, you know, they're talking about, I think, for the most part, registrants. And as opposed to dealing with really consumers aren't only registrants. Consumers are the ones who ultimately buy products at the owner of the second level name or the ones that use that second level website. So I think that it's really important for us to take a step back and to say, you know, what is ICANN's job? Is ICANN's job when it's supposed to protect consumers? Are they supposed to protect registrants as consumers, or are they supposed to protect those that ultimately use the websites or email as users? And I think that's kind of a fundamental question and one that I never thought that ICANN did a good job in answering, because some could argue, as it does, as I put in the chat, some could argue that consumers may actually have a better experience with the registry that owns the generic term, or sorry, that owns the generic registry, than ultimately a second-level domain holder that operates a second-level domain under that registry. So, for example, take a .search. In theory, Google could give, and what it said in its letter and its public comment, it basically said that it could give a better experience to the person that comes to a .search domain than a third-party registrant who registered the name, who may or may not ever use that domain. The experience for the ultimate consumer that goes to that second level name may have a better experience if it's owned and operated by Google as opposed to a third party. You don't know. It could go either way. So I think that's an interesting argument. Now, Google, at the end of the day, in its public comment, said that it would agree to operate .search, .app, and one other one in an open manner. And others agreed to operate theirs in an open manner. But I'm just not necessarily convinced that ICANN, you know, thought or made a determination as who it's supposed to look out for. Is it looking out for registrants, or is it looking out for ultimate end users and consumers? I think that deserves some conversation.
Thank you, Jeff. I think we have gotten a few comments here in following what you said. Samantha has also provided a bit of insight, saying that it seems to me that if ICANN wades into making decisions on behalf of a consumer, in this context, it gets into content regulation, which is outside its remit. That's one comment. And then Phil Buckingham has also provided that Therefore, there is a direct relationship between the top level, the owner, and the end user. Therefore, the owner controls who their end users are. Surely there is anti-competitive limit consumer choice. Oh, this is anti-competitive women's consumer stories. Okay. Thank you. So I'm just going to, Jeff, you have your hand up again. Go ahead.
Yeah, just to respond to Samantha, and I actually agree. So let me reframe it as opposed to a consumer. So ICANN's role is one part of ICANN's mission is to act in the public interest. And these comments basically said, the ones that were against closed generics said, it's in the public interest because consumers may be confused or because it limits consumer choice. It's in the public interest for ICANN to prohibit closed generics. And then on the other side, some said, well, no, it's in the public interest for ICANN to accept innovative business model or innovative models, and it's in the public interest to give the ultimate consumers, those who visit the web page, you know, better choice in the type of content that they're getting. So I think you can word it in that way. What's actually the public interest in this case? Which public interest overrides? Is it the overriding public interest of registrant? You should have access to register.
I think you're in the can again.
Sorry.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, so the question is, on public interest, is it the public interest to protect registrants' right to register names in a new GTLD, or is the public interest to protect consumers, at the end of the day, in being able to get new and innovative content that may be supplied by the same, the registry who's also the registrant? So that's the question, and which do we find is more overriding in the public interest?
Thank you, Jeff. So defining public interest in this matter is also another important aspect. I think, do we want to make that an action item to figure out if we need to define public interest or who the public interest is? Kurtz. You know, a few people typing in response to that. What does the CCT say about public interest? Okay, I'm just going to let that conversation, they have not addressed this topic. Samantha, you have before.
Over the app.
A little bit low, but we can hear you clearly. If we turn it up a bit, I think
it's
we can
better.
Hear you. That's wonderful. You are loud and clear. Go ahead.
All right. Thanks, guys. I struggle with technology. It's embarrassing. Just to kind of respond to Jeff's, and as we're thinking about this question of the public interest, the term public interest is something that I've always found incredibly confusing in a general context and especially within an ICANN context. But I just want to say that if we start to go down the path of defining the public interest as ICANN safeguarding or championing what kinds of content internet users or like everyday people are able to access online, it just seems that at that point ICANN has really stepped outside of its bounds. It's not really up to ICANN, in my opinion, to make decisions that will impact or that have the aim of impacting whether people can access specific content or whether the content that's provided for access is of one form or a different form. I just wanted to throw that kind of out there as some food for thought as we're tackling this question of what the public interest is, who is the customer that ICANN should be working on behalf of, and those kinds of quandaries.
All right, I'm going to let Jeff go, and then I'd like to respond to Samantha in my personal capacity. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. And by the way, just I should have said this at the beginning, I'm just trying to get conversation going, so don't hold me to the fact that I believe or don't believe some of this. I'm just trying to generate conversation. which I think we should be having. So I think, Samantha, I think your comments are right on topic. I think it's great. And I think, but I would say, isn't that what ICANN did in this case? Didn't the, because the rules weren't set out in advance, what ICANN did in this case was make a determination that the public interest weighed in favor of, registrants being able to register in any generic string, as opposed to the public interest being in the registry's innovative model in theory that it could have operated for end users. So in this case, and as Kurt says, the rules were set out in advance, closed generics were allowed. And I think, okay, you're right, Kurt. And I think ICANN actually did step in here and change the rules, and ICANN did say and make a determination that it was in the public interest to not allow closed generics. So that's why I think we need to take a step back and not just assume that ICANN got it right. And if, like Sam said, if we do believe that, and maybe she doesn't believe it either and is just trying to get conversation going, but if we believe as a group that ICANN should not be involved in that kind of regulation, then wouldn't that vote in favor of overturning what ICANN did and going back to the initial allowance of these types of TLDs?
So I'm going to respond to Jeff as well as Sam at the same time. And I think Gigi Levine kind of hit the nail on the head. But I thought ICANN did that when they started bringing in safeguards into the picture, at least for the requirement for monitoring abuse, which is another Spec 11, Section 3 that we all enjoy. B, I think it is. Anyways, I think ICANN at that point started to address what the interests of end users and who the public interest in this aspect is. I think that's kind of defined there. And in this aspect, I think, as well as what Jeff stated, that they already did start to do this when they brought in the aspect of, okay, what is a closed generic and whether or not we should have that criteria. So it's not just here in the closed generic discussion, but it's also in other aspects of the safeguards when you're looking at the aspect of who the public interest is. And I think that definition can change depending on which of these topics you're talking about. So, and Phil did say where you draw the line, but, I think you have to draw the line at some aspect. I think you need to have some kind of common definition within the RA aspect of whether or not that's a registrant or whether that's consumers, because there are both ways of thinking in that aspect. I'm going to keep going with the cons. Sorry, the pros. I do want to get time to get the cons going, so I'm just going to quickly go through them. And unless if you do really have to do something you want to say, then please feel free to say it. But please keep in mind we need to talk about the cons. Or we can always talk about it next week. I'm thinking that this is going to be a conversation we need to have for a few more weeks than originally planned. All right, sorry. Not originally planned. This was originally planned. We need to have it for a few weeks to get really to pull this out. Next pro on the list. New GTLDs are valuable economic assets. ICANN policies should assure that these assets are allocated to their most highly valued users. Uses. Sorry. Their most highly valued uses. And then the next comment here says, in support of allowing closed generics on a case-by-case basis, closed generics can serve the public interest. disclosure notice can serve the public interest. ICANN should allow specific closed generics to operate if it can be established that they serve the public interest. So, putting on my personal capacity hat again, I thought that this last comment, the case-by-case basis, could be potentially one way of looking at the closed generics. If there really is a need to demonstrate what they do for the public interest, in that aspect, I think that they should be allowed on a case by case basis. That's a really good way of looking at this, because it does set some kind of criteria, but it doesn't completely destroy the fact of, or completely ignore the public interest in this case. So, yes, as opposed to not establishing any criteria at all, this allows for case by case, but then it opens the question of what criteria, do you need to have for closed generics? When should they be allowed case by case? That's another difficult path, but at the same time, but it is one that we can explore if others feel support in that aspect. So, taking off my personal capacity hat and putting back on my co-chair hat. All right, so we have gone through the pros. Let's jump through the cons. Hey, everybody, keep those comments from the chat coming. I'm just going to go through the list. Unless it becomes a heated conversation, then I think something we'll bring to the mic. But anyways, cons. All right, cons. Going back to the first page on the right-hand side. Cons. Closed generics should be restricted. Sorry, let me grab a quick drink of water. Nope. All right. All right, first con. Generic words are a form of public space. It is not in the public interest to have these strings under the control of a single entity. Again, public interest has come up here, so who is the public interest? Sorry, who is the public? Second comment. Closed generics harm competition. If a single player in a market has exclusive access to an industry-related generic TLD string, this player has an unfair advantage. Kurt and Jeff, that is a really nice topic to explore at public interest review panel. That's just, so Kurt in the chat mentioned, can you imagine a public interest review panel? I think this was in response to the case-by-case aspect. It would put ICANN in too tough of a position because it would have to define what the public interest is. But Jeff, all jokes aside, I'd kind of like to open that up, because isn't that what ICANN is doing here? I think that a lot of us can, they have taken and, so just to be specific, what they did originally here in the first round was, or at least the 2012 round, is that there were a lot of strings that were identified in the GAC Category 2 advice. And there's also, there's a lot of generic strings out there as well that were not assigned with any, not given any commentary, even though they had that closed generic model in their application. But I feel that a lot of those TLDs were kind of pulled out because of the aspect or their wide, because of the public interest value in that. For example, I think Dot Books was pulled out because there's a lot of companies out there that that have an interest in that, and having one registry or one single company regulating that would be difficult. But at the same time, I think there were a lot of other words out there that had the closed generic model at least written in their question 18 of the application, and ICANN didn't pull those out. They only pulled out the ones that were mentioned in the GAC report, to my knowledge. So I think ICANN did pull the card of, defining what public interest was in that, because you can't define the strings without looking at the public interest and who would be using those strings. So, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think we're talking about the implementation of their rule as opposed to what the rule is. The rule wasn't a case-by-case basis. The rule was that if you are a generic, and it's in Section or Specification 11, Part 3D, ICANN covers its tracks. It basically says that you can't do it, and the fact that it may or may not have picked you out of that bunch, or the fact that the GAC didn't pick you out of that bunch, doesn't mean anything. ICANN still has the right, if it determines that your string is generic, unless you're a brand, in which case, well, no, even in that case, because if you look at even the brand TLD specification 13 has this little confusing, inconsistent statement that says that you can't use the TLD in a manner that's inconsistent with the definition of a generic string in specification 11.3D. I think that's completely inconsistent, but I don't think it was meant to be on a case-by-case basis. I think ICANN meant to set a rule, but it wasn't like you had to be judged on a specific criteria. It may have started with the list that the GAC set out, but I do know that other TLDs that weren't on that list still had to agree to 11.3D, and you couldn't agree to 11.3D and be compliant by being closed unless you were a brand or got the code of conduct exemption in specification 9.
Thank you, Jeff. Do you still have your hand up to talk, or can I reply to that? I do agree with you. When ICANN put that wording in there, that they're trying to cover the tracks, but I do think that there is a problem in the implementation itself as of today, because I do think that if they're really going to implement that, they're not implementing that in for certain strings. When they look at the rights of the very, very regulated aspect of some of those generic strings, the regulated policies that some of these strings have, if ICANN is really set on that generic word, no, you can't have exclusive use for that, well, they need to look at some of the registration policies for some of those TLDs. But that's just my personal hat again. And that's something that we can always take a look at if others feel. But let's move back to the cons. Were there any useful comments that came out of that last conversation? Or was that... Okay. All right. But let's move back to the cons. Sorry about that. Everyone kind of got derailed for a moment. Okay. I did read the second con, so let's look at the third con. So closed generics favor large industry players, tipping the scales in favor of those who already dominate the market and potentially limiting consumer choice. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, so on this one, thanks, it's Jeff Newman. I want to play devil's advocate on this one, too. Doesn't the law take care of this? I mean, if truly someone were acting in an anti-competitive manner or in a monopoly manner, wouldn't relevant law or applicable law be used to handle this as opposed to ICANN trying to regulate? So I think this kind of the comment I just made fits in with a bunch of these. A bunch of people argued or sorry, people, a bunch of companies argued that it would be anti-competitive to give one company control over a generic string, and you'll see a lot of these cons definitely refer to that anti-competitiveness. My comment back to that was, why is it that in this situation, ICANN's willing to act, but in other competition situations, ICANN is stays out of it and says, well, that could be dealt with by competition law. Why wouldn't
Thank you, Jeff. Oh, sorry, you're talking.
Nope. All right, you go.
No, I was just I was going to continue the conversation on the cons and say thank you, because I've actually been looking for someone to say that for a long time. But if you have more to say on the topic, please feel free. I'll shut up for a second. Go ahead. Oh, okay. I'll just keep going. All right. So Steve has put a comment in the chat, brought it back to life, saying, I'd love to see some metrics on this for round one. And say, sorry, Steve Coates, I'd love to see some metrics on this for round one. How many traditional domain industry insiders file for Coates generics versus new players to the industry? That is interesting. I don't think there were a lot of old faces or veterans in the domain industry that applied for closed generics, from as far as I saw. But I think mostly new faces probably did that. I think this comes from the idea of the new business model. I'm not saying that old veterans can't have that model as well. I'm just saying that's what I remembered, at least. Jeff is typing, and he might reply to you in regards to that. Industry insiders, okay. So I think Jeff is kind of agreeing with me there. So, all right, moving on. Sorry, thank you. Everyone is so patient today. All right, closed generics, sorry, fourth column down. Closed generics undermine the goals of the trademark system, which forbids individuals from gaining exclusive property rights and generic names of products and an unfair competitive advantage in the marketplace. So this one brings in the aspect of trademark rights for closed generic, but at the same time, you can look at the specification 13 for allowing allowing for a generic to be used within the aspect of the trademark, within the aspect of what trademark they have within that service. I think this is an interesting comment to dissect in a lot of ways, but I'm going to keep going down the list just because we have a lot of comments to go through still, and we only have 6 minutes. So, next one down the list is different business models for TLDs may confuse consumers. This one's a little broad, but this one's a little vague, but still, it does contribute to the pie. Next one down is closed generics may mislead consumers if... My eyes hurt. It used to be... Closed generics may mislead consumers. If closed, generic TLDs are approved, consumers may mistakenly believe that they are using a GTLD that allows for competition, when in reality the GTLD is closed and apparently competitive products are being offered by a single entity. Next comment down. Ooh, this one's a long one. Good. While generic strings are in use by specific brands and companies at the second level, the top level is different. The impact is greater. A new GTLD requires ICANN approval and substantial resources, both for the application and for the operation of the GTLD. Search engines are likely to give priority to pages associated with the GTLD that appears to be dedicated to content related the search terms and more likely to be controlled by an established relevant institution. The stakes are higher regarding ICANN delegation of a GTLD, and the public interest concerns must weigh more heavily than they do for individual domain names. Does anyone want to reply to this? I really want to reply to it, but I feel I should just keep moving on and ignore this personal desire of mine. Kurt is typing, so he might have some comments on it, but I'm just going to keep going to the next one. Oh, two comments. Yes, thank you, Kurt. Okay. Two comments. One, isn't the world's largest bookseller operating .book the wet dream of the new GTLD program? We would have already seen innovation, not to mention the attention it would have brought to the new GTLD program, which is sorely lacking in public recognition. Why would that be stifled? And two, at the end of the day, these are just domain names. What is the difference between .book and book.com? Everything is temporary. One party might have control for a while, but the resources always flow to the parties that value them most highly. Thank you very much, Kurt. Again, I will ignore my personal feeling on this to agree with Kurt, but I will keep going unless anyone else has anything else to say on this. Actually, you know what? I'm going to draw a close to it. We have two more comments, but we only have 2 minutes left. The next comment talks about the delegation of closed GTLDs made violating ICANN's bylaws. And then the last comment also talks about considering closed generics when you look at non-Latin characters, such as Chinese or Japanese. Just one thing to keep in mind if you talk about that. Just to keep in mind. So thank you, everyone, for today. Does anyone have any last minute they must absolutely say? Have something to say. Jeff, for example, do you have any closing remarks? No? All right, then. Thank you. Oh, Jeff, you go ahead.
Yeah, just to say, there's a lot of people on this call, a lot of people that didn't kind of express their opinions. It would be great if you could, even by email, just give us thoughts. There were obviously, this was a very sensitive issue. There were, I would say, probably the comments that were against closed generics probably outnumbered the comments that were for closed generics at least 3 or 4 to 1. Now, a lot of them were competitors of people that applied for strings that they themselves did not apply for. Maybe they didn't want their competitors to have those strings. So that's one scenario. But there are a lot of feelings on both sides, and Kurt's given one a good rationale as to the pros in favor of closed generics, but there obviously were two sides, and to the extent that you feel strongly one way or the other, it's really important to make that known on the list.
Thanks, Jeff. In the response to that, competitors are doing a public comment because of that. Perhaps we could. I know that there's a lot of obligation procedures, and it's. I woke up at 5 a.m. to do this today, but we don't have a current obligation procedure for unfair competitive advantage, do we? If not, that'd be something to explore. But that's another conversation in and of itself. Everyone, thank you very much. This is your co-chair, Michael Fleming, signing off and saying we'll see you next time. Goodbye, America.
Hey, it's not just America. Bye, Michael.
Not in the U.S. either, but I can't remember if that was a famous comment or. I'm going to be a turd. Keep saying that. All right, thank you, Kishore.
And once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for everyone who has joined. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.